If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This episode is brought to you by Holistic Goddess. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. It boosts focus. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. It nurtures comfort. It gently addresses vaginal dryness with black cohosh. It's comforting to have that support during this time. It has natural ingredients. I love that it uses these ingredients like sage and rhubarb extract. If you're going through similar changes like perimenopause and menopause, I highly recommend giving this a try. It's been a relief for me, and I think it could help you too. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD. Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I hope everyone stayed safe during the hurricane. I'm down here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, which was hit by an extensive amount of damage from some tornadoes that ripped through. Luckily, my house wasn't hit, but I did lose power for about 24 hours. And the whole yard was damaged with like a lot of debris, but nothing was actually broken. So, you know, trees are down, like definitely the landscapers will have a lot of work ahead of them. But anyways, I'm very happy that everyone I know is safe. I'm praying for the people who, you know, really were affected by this. It's very sad. So let's get to today's episode. I'm very, very excited to be bringing to you an episode that really demystifies a topic that not a lot of people like to talk about. We're not really educated in it, but something that all women have to go through, which is menopause. So we are joined by Dr. Kate White. She's a leading OBGYN and researcher in women's reproductive health. Her work has been widely published in medical journals. She also collaborates with a name you may have heard of, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and they provide expert insights on menopause. Today, Dr. White breaks down the complexities of menopause in general, including its impact on sexual health, hormonal treatments, and how women can advocate for themselves in healthcare. Her vast clinical and academic experience makes her the perfect guest to help demystify this often misunderstood stage of life. So tune in for a conversation packed with practical advice and empowerment with Dr. Kate White. Dr. White, it's been a long time coming. I'm very excited to have you here. This is a topic that I think everyone wants to know about, but I might be a little too scared to bring it up unless it's in a safe environment. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I said, when we were speaking previously, I am so comfortable talking about menopause because I talk about it all day, every day, in work and out of work and with my friends, so especially. And it is something that you forget sometimes that not everyone is as comfortable talking about or has the opportunity to talk with someone who actually knows what's going on in science, which is a lot right now.
Exactly. Okay. So there's so, like you were just saying, there's so many misconceptions too about menopause, about perimenopause. So can we just start off with the basics? Can you tell us what perimenopause is, what menopause is, and what the stages are, kind of?
Absolutely. So from the time you're born, you have every egg you're ever going to have. You actually lose a lot of them before you're even born. And you have, you know, about a million or so when you're born. And then as you go through your puberty and then you go to into your first periods, by the time you reach 30, you only have about 10% of your eggs left. And each of those eggs has a little area around it that produces estrogen. And that's part of that first part of your cycle, when everything is building up. And then after you ovulate, you have progesterone. And by the time you get to age 40 and you notice in your 30s that maybe things are not as regular, things are not following that pathway as closely as they always had, you get to that is perimenopause. And it can last from about 5 years to 10 to 12 years for some people. And once you get through those changes, which you have wild swings in your hormone levels, you get to where you're really have no eggs left to ovulate. So that means that there's none of those cells around the eggs that are producing estrogen. So you don't have estrogen, you don't have progesterone, you start feeling all the effects of that. So the definition of actual menopause is the one day, menopause is actually just one day, the day a year from the last time you had a period. And everything out before that is premenopausal, and everything after that is postmenopausal. So, but you still have lots of those symptoms, even if you get to that postmenopausal state.
Okay. So I think like the basic questions before we even get into the science stuff and all the real stuff, mm-hmm. I feel like, first of all, is there a certain age or is everybody different?
Everybody is different. And there are actually things that are trend more to some people. They're certain populations that tend to be earlier, tend to be later. But in general, the average age for an American woman to be menopausal is 51. So that time of perimenopause can start in your late 30s or start in your late 40s. And then it can go on to some people still have regular cycles at 54 or 55, but the average age of menopause is 51.
Okay. So if we're thinking that that's the average age, 51, let's back up to say 47, 48, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What are some symptoms of this premenopause? Is premenopause the same thing as perimenopause?
So yeah. So I would say that premenopause can be anything back to your birth, I suppose. But But perimenopause is that zone of chaos that is where your hormones are going up and down and not being controlled well by your ovaries.
Okay. So how do you know that it is perimenopause as mm-hmm. opposed to some other health issue? So like, I know for me, I'm 49.
Right.
And maybe 3 years ago, I started to get, it was just 1 month, but I got terrible hot flashes at night. And then after the hot flash would happen for a good amount of time, you know, half an hour or so, I would get a terrible cold sweat and then mm-hmm. I'd be fine. I thought I had COVID. I didn't know. I thought I was dying. There was all sorts of things I thought. Yeah. And then I didn't have my period for like 3 months, but then I got my period. That's never happened again. And I've only missed my period like once or twice for like 20 days. So then I was like, oh, maybe I was just sick. So back to my question, how do we know if you're sick or if that's part of you're kind of on your way?
That is why studying menopause and perimenopause has been so neglected partially because it is so crazy different person to person. And so what you had hot flashes and night sweats, just that little period of time, and they probably will come back at some point. But other people may, like 10% of people will never, ever get a hot flash. And some people get palpitations, joint pain, burning tongue, itching ears, tinnitus. All of these can be problems that are due to your hormone changes, but unfortunately, they can also be problems from other things. Like you said, how do I know it's not COVID? Unfortunately, it's a diagnosis of exclusion. You have to make sure. So just for example, today I was on a menopause forum with a bunch of menopause experts, which was is delightful. But we were talking about hormone-induced migraines that people get with orgasm. They have an orgasm and then they have a splitting migraine immediately following it. And so we say, is this just perimenopause or does she have a brain tumor or a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is like a bleed in her head? I was like, you know what? You actually have to exclude that. So, if you have something, perfect example, one of the most common things I see in of the uncommon things are heart palpitations. And you may have had a friend that's had this. It actually was Oprah's first sign of menopause. She went through a gazillion dollar workup for her heart palpitations. And I had that same thing in my 40s. And I went to the cardiologist just like, because I had no idea. I'd never heard this as a symptom of menopause or perimenopause. And I talked to the cardiologist and he's like, oh yeah, I see it in women like you who are like me, highly stressed, teenagers in the house, you know, a job there where I miss sleep a lot of times. And I was like, but it never came to any kind of conclusion for him or for me that if you're seeing this a lot in women like me, most likely this is a disease state. This is not just me being stressed or dramatic or just overreacting to my life. This is my sinoatrial node of my heart reacting to a drop in my estrogen levels.
Right.
And we know that. And so I have to rule out, because I don't want to drop dead on the floor of the operating room, that I had to make sure that my heart was okay. And everyone does have to make sure that there isn't something other underlying problem, but it's exactly the problem that you're saying, that it is, we have to rule out those things. Because the only thing that really is almost solely associated with menopause are hot flashes and night sweats, all except maybe for COVID and tuberculosis.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the symptoms in particular. There are physical symptoms and there are mental symptoms. What are those?
Oh, my goodness. The list is exhaustive. There are estrogen receptors in every part of your body. Every part of your body can be affected, and you'll hear it from all of your friends. Dry eyes, of course, hot flashes, night sweats, sleep disruption. Those are probably the biggest ones that are most common. Vaginal dryness, pain with intercourse, and this don't miss out on decreased libido. Because I how many of my friends are like, oh my gosh, like, that's the last thing. I don't even want my foot to touch his foot in case he thinks maybe I might want to have sex. And so there are all those things. But with other things that we don't even think about, I hadn't related until recently, frozen shoulder, joint pain. There are tons of receptors in these joints. Why is it more common in women? And why has no one looked into the reason why it's more common in women in their 40s and 50s, this capsulitis of the joint. As I said, there's so many things. The palpitations are a big one, but so is fatigue, brain fog. Mm. Oh my gosh. I'm glad you haven't experienced that yet if you haven't, because it is real. People thinking regular talks with my friends saying, I'm pretty sure I've got dementia.
Okay, so that was what I was going to ask. What is the difference between when you say brain fog and then feeling like you're forgetting everything? Because I forget everything. And then I can't remember if I, you know, said something or I just thought it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. So
I always am like, oh my God, am I about to get Alzheimer's or like what's happening?
That is so classic and something I hear. Again, I actually was in the line at Aldi getting and checking out, and the lady in front of me had left something behind. It was like, will you mind watching my cart? Because I came here especially to get salmon and I did not get the salmon. And I said, listen, I totally get it. I will hold your place, because it is that brain fog. It does get better, but it impacts. Not only impacts us in our insecurity about being able to function in our jobs, but it really can impact your confidence, your ability to be your executive functioning. If you are trying to run a corporation or run your kids to their dentist appointment, you have to be able to function in the way that you were able to before. 2 years ago.
Yeah. And it creates a sense of worry because you're kind of like, oh my God, can I get through this without other people noticing this, you know, that I'm going through this? So are these symptoms that you're talking about things that are happening in perimenopause? And then after you go through this 12 months of not getting your period and you've actually hit the day of menopause, do the symptoms start to go away and you start to feel more like yourself, or explain the arc of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So certainly in perimenopause, when those hormone levels really start swinging. Mm-hmm. So because what happens is that your ovaries have a little bit more difficulty recruiting a follicle to ovulate, and so your brain sends a message called follicle stimulating hormone to the ovary when the estrogen level is low, and if your ovary doesn't respond right away, it sends a whole lot more. And it's like, oh no, really? I really want estrogen. And so your ovary, once it does start recruiting these lazy follicles that are now been sitting in the ovary for a long time, and they bring up all those cells, like I said, around it that produce the estrogen, and you get all of this estrogen, much higher than you were getting in your 20s and 30s. Sometimes, you know, a normal estrogen level could be 100, 150. You're getting 300, 400, sometimes even 600. And I'll have patients who have their primary care doctor was like, let me just check your hormones. And they check it and they freak out. They're like, she's got a tumor. And I'm like, no, if you check it now, a week later, it's going to be way down here. And that change from an estrogen level way up here to an estrogen level way down here, back to your normal baseline, that difference is what you're feeling. Instead of an estrogen pattern that goes like this, you have an estrogen pattern that goes like that. And that is where your brain and your joints and your mood are feeling that loss of estrogen in that second half of your cycle. Mm. It's almost like anyone who got mood changes during that premenstrual, like PMDD is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. It's like that, but on steroids, because the changes are so much wider. Right. And it lasts through perimenopause. And then your ovaries are still making estrogen after that 12-month marker, but they're just not ovulating and getting enough change to have enough lining tissue to shed. But they're still going up and down for several years after that. And eventually they'll get to the point where they're not really making much of anything. But you do see actual hormone changes in the structure of the brain. When they do brain MRI, you see restructuring of the brain. And most people, as they come through it, some of that brain fog and some of the word finding and those feelings of memory loss will get better, but not everyone.
Right.
So some people, I'm sorry.
No.
So when we look at the replacing estrogen, it actually, the studies will show that if we start replacing that estrogen at the time in our 40s and 50s, we can actually prevent some of those changes from progressing to dementia.
Got it. Okay. So let's talk about this, the hormones and that you're mm-hmm. bringing up. Explain if, okay. So a lot of people that I've spoken to have said that mm-hmm. for them, that they thought hormone replacement therapy was somewhat dangerous mm-hmm. and there was some risk to it. So can you talk about the risk and also talk about, the risk and benefits of bioidentical hormones, which I don't know.
Sure. What that is like.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
So, let's see where we can start the best. The best thing I think would be, let's just talk about what the term bioidentical means, because I think that that's a really good place to question that a lot of people have. Okay. Bioidentical just means that it is the chemically identical to the structure of the estrogen and progesterone that your body makes from your ovaries.
Okay.
So it's actually a marketing term. It's not really a medical term, but it's useful in its description of what you're getting. So okay. You can make
and is it made just for you personally based on what you're used to? Or
no, I think that's really what's interesting. I think what people confuse compounded hormones with bioidentical hormones. Compounded mm-hmm. hormones are taking the hormones that you, this particular type of hormone, the estradiol is what your body makes from your ovaries, and progesterone that are chemically the same, and then they just mix them into a compound that is of different strengths. So mm-hmm. when you have compounded medicines versus medicines that are FDA approved from your CVS, for example. The difference is that the pharmacist, the compounding pharmacist, is taking the same medications that he's taking or she is taking them from a jar and mixing it with a vehicle like a lotion or a gel and figuring out what level you want and what concentration. It's definitely not any safer than any type of any kind of hormones that you're getting commercially. But it is actually less standardized. So there used to be a lot of what you would get from the CVS or Walgreens were prescribed by doctors were things that were not bioidentical, but were estrogens there's estrogens and progestogens, which is the mm-hmm. progesterone. So when you get a birth control pill, it has an estrogen and a progesterone in it, but they are typically not bioidentical. They are chemically made to be actually more intense than what you would get that's bioidentical. So, and that's a good thing for birth control pills because they help suppress ovulation better than hormonal menopausal hormonal therapy. So they are not made from, they're not exactly the same as what your body would make. And so that's the difference between bioidentical and the FDA approved things that are synthetic hormones.
Okay.
They just have a different concentration.
And why would people say that they're very risky to take, when it sounds to me like it would be great for you because it would make you feel better?
Yeah. So the one of the reasons is because we had there was a lot of misinformation that came out from a study in 2002 called the Women's Health Initiative. And it was supposed to be a great study, but it unfortunately studied hormone replacement therapy using conjugated equine estrogen, which is estrogen made from horse urine, harvested from horse urine, and a synthetic progestin called medroxyprogesterone acetate. And the study was done to try to look at how to prove that hormone replacement therapy is awesome for cardiac disease prevention. They thought because women up to the age of 40 have much lower heart disease risk than men, and then once they get to 60, their heart disease risk is equal to men. And it ends up being the number one killer of women is heart disease. So they said, we're going to do this study and prove how amazing it is for people to be on hormone therapy. The only problem was that they didn't study the right women and they didn't study the right hormones. When you looked at this, the group that they studied, it was women, the average age was of the women they started on hormones was 62.
So
they already had a lot of cardiac plaques built up in their vessels. And so then once they started them on hormone, this estrogen, the conjugated equine horse urine estrogen, it was very inflammatory and caused those plaques to break off and clot off and give them heart attacks. So they stopped the study, but there were not all bad from this study because there are some good things that they found. They found that actually that women on estrogen alone had a decreased risk of breast cancer, instead of an increased risk. But unfortunately, what they saw and what was all over Newsweek and all the morning talk shows was, tell your mom she has to stop her hormones because it's going to kill her.
Right.
And then we didn't get a lot more from that. And that's what we grew up with.
Right. So, all right. For people listening, what is it that they should be taking once they start to see or feel some of these symptoms? What are the things they can get over the counter before they even have to head in to see the doctor and get their hormones checked?
Hormone checks. So if you're looking for things that can help, one, there are things like magnesium. Magnesium can help with sleep disruption. Magnesium glycinate, magnesium I-threonate are two of the ones that really can be helpful. But the other things that are going to help, vitamin D3 can be helpful. But really diet and exercise more than anything is, okay, are going to be, you can't outrun or out medicalize what diet and exercise can do to help change and help to ameliorate some of the symptoms.
So when you say diet, what kind of foods should people be focusing on?
So there are definitely things like the high fiber diet that they're trying to, that will, and things that we're going to influence your gut flora. So you can, things that have some, the leafy greens, the flaxseed, those things help to metabolize the estrogens that are these huge estrogen levels that are swinging in your through your system. So those things can help the dietary things that you're going to look at, phytoestrogens. Some people find that phytoestrogens, things like soy, are going to be helpful in trying to stabilize those levels a little bit before, but eventually you're going to get to a point where your estrogen levels are not going to get stabilized by really much other than replacing your estrogen.
Got it. Okay. But like for people that are literally going to sleep at night and having hot flashes, is there something that, but I mean, is that what you're saying? The magnesium could really
magnesium,
help?
Yeah, it can help, but it really is going to be bamboo sheets. Excellent. They're actually bamboo sheets, I would say, are one of my favorite things for menopause. Really? The waking lighter. Oh my gosh. Tremendous. And there's a lot you can do with your sleep environment. The optimal temperature for sleeping is between 62 and 65 degrees. So for women who are in that sleep, yes. So making sure that you've got to guard your sleep, because even with hormone replacement therapy, all those things, you're still at higher risk for sleep disruption. Making sure that you've got the right sleep environment in terms of your pillows and sheets and things can make a huge difference. Now, I still every once in a while have to throw out that leg to cool off, and I have the fan that's going on. In fact, I think my husband can't sleep without the fan now anymore because he's so used to it. So I do try to optimize the environment and white noise and all those things, because you are still going to be at higher risk. People can use melatonin. That's not a bad thing to use either. But you're going to have more sleep disruption. You're actually more prone to sleep apnea with menopause as you get older, through women in their 40s and 50s, regardless of change in your weight. So you may not realize that part of your sleep disruption has to do with that, not just hot flashes and night sweats. So that's something I've got for.
A couple of people I was talking to were most upset about the weight gain. And a couple of them did not feel like it had to do with the food they were eating because they were still watching what they were eating. Yeah. Explain how people are gaining weight just from the hormone changes.
Yeah, they are completely right. So just like we said that you have an increased risk of heart disease, one of the reasons you have that increased risk in heart disease is the change in your metabolism. As your estrogen levels go down, not only we talked a little bit about your gut metabolism, it changes the actual bacteria. It changes your gut flora when your estrogen levels change. So you're absorbing and metabolizing differently. It's changing how your insulin is metabolizing. Mm-hmm. So you become more insulin resistant. And you getting all this visceral fat. Visceral fat is the fat that wraps around our organs. So internally, you're like, even you get me, you can see like, okay, I feel bloated all the time. Sometimes it's not actually being bloated. That's actually increased fat on your organs.
Wow.
And so So I hear that all the time. I'm still running. I'm still working out. I'm eating exactly the same or less, and I'm still gaining weight. So there you get a slowing of the metabolism, and you get loss of testosterone that can decrease your muscle mass. So even if you're working out, you may not build muscle, which if you lose muscle, then that slows your metabolism because your muscle is metabolizing so much faster than the rest of your body. And so if you're losing muscle, then you're losing metabolism, you're losing your recovery from exercise. All those things are real. And we can see it if you go year to year and you check your cholesterol levels, you're going to see increase in your triglycerides, decrease in your HDL, increase in your LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, without doing anything different.
Okay. So let's talk about something I know everybody has a question about. Mm-hmm. You always hear that your sex drive disappears. We talked a little bit about libido. Yeah. So why does that happen? How do we fix that? I know there has to do with, vaginal dryness. Explain that whole
part of it is when we look at any kind of sexual function, there is what we call a biopsychosocial model, which I think we all know, right? It's part biology, it's part how you're interacting with your partner, and it's part what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
So you have to, it is looking at all those prongs of this fork that we've landed on, which is a little prickly. So the biology changes are, yes, two things that I feel like are the major drivers. One is you do lose your testosterone. You have about half the testosterone or less of what you had in your 30s and in your 20s. And as those changes happen, you do see changes that in the how it affects that desire center of your brain. But you also have that sleep disruption we were talking about. And you may not even notice it as sleep disruption. You may not be waking up completely, but people that wear sleep trackers, they see the changes in deep sleep. And we see in women, sleep disruption presents very differently physically for us. So we may still spring out of bed. We may not, but what we see is daytime, like pervasive fatigue. So people are just like, I just do not have the energy to do what I was doing before. So that level of sleep deprivation is different. And it completely, if you think about reproduction and what we're made to make babies in an ideal state. So for women, if the laundry's done and you have the grocery shop for, and you've thought about, you know, kids' camps, they're scheduled and all those things, and everything else is good, then you might want to have sex. But for men, sex is a stress reliever. So it is not, for us, it's like desire is only there if everything else is ideal for bringing another human into the world.
Right.
So if everything is chaos and stress, it's the last thing that your brain's going to be like, no way, this is not the time. So it's unfortunate that we have that mismatch, which is the social part of it, where when men are like, ah, this has been a horrible day, let's have sex. And you're like, are you kidding me? No. So when you have to, but we still get the distress because we want that closeness with our partner. And we really actually need the endorphins to get our brain back. But our desire center is so downregulated that we have to, sometimes we just have sex even though we don't have desire,
right?
Because we're like maintenance, you know, relationship maintenance,
right?
And again, most of my patients say, you know, once I actually get started, I'm able to have an orgasm. I do enjoy it, and I do enjoy having had sex, and I do appreciate that endorphins and the closeness that in the relationship. But it's just getting there.
Do you believe like a testosterone pellet or the testosterone shots help during a period like this?
It can help for some people, but not everyone. And what's interesting is we don't see specific correlations with low testosterone and low libido in everyone. When we look at the actual studies, at low testosterone, there are some people that have a fine libido. And we check their testosterone and it's almost undetectable. And then we have other people, like the opposite is true. So there are people for whom testosterone, if it is low, and they have low libido, you can replace it and get it back to a physiologic level, whether it's pellets or a topical. There is no FDA approved testosterone for women, by the way, so you can write to your senators about that, because that's bullshit. And so it's only approved for men.
But is that because they haven't come up with it yet? Or like what's the problem?
The problem is that in order to bring a product through the FDA, it has to have financial backing to do the studies. And there is not enough money or interest to do that for a testosterone for women.
Interesting. Okay.
And so that is part of the problem. It's not that it's, and, but so what we do now is we use pellets that are made for men and that frequently will give women far too much testosterone. We use compounded testosterone from compounding pharmacies who work very well, hard to get women the drugs that they need, but are not recommended actually by the North American Menopause Society or American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology or International Society for Women's Sexual Health, which are the ones who look at this. They don't recommend compounds because they are very inconsistent in their dosage. I absolutely prescribe compounded medicines for my patients, but I try to use the FDA approved medicines because they are consistent. They have to prove to the FDA dose to dose to dose that this is going to be the same for every woman. Right. And so you can use the FDA approved testosterone for men, but you use 1/10 of the dose that men use. And then we have to check the levels for testosterone much more than we do for estrogen or progesterone, because if you over replace testosterone, you can get increased cholesterol, you can get liver problems, you can get hair in places you don't want it, and loss of hair in places you do want it. Right. You can get permanent voice changes, and you can get acne. Those are probably the big players. If your testosterone levels get too high.
Okay, so I know you do specialize in sexual medicine and knowing about all this. What would you say about that? What should people know that we don't know?
I would say that the number one thing that you can do, not just for your sex life, but for your long life in general, is vaginal estrogen. Absolutely, 100% vaginal estrogen. When we have, when we lose estrogen to the vagina, it used to be called senile vagina. and then it was called vaginal atrophy, which was just slightly better. And now it's called genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And we say GSM because it's a whole lot easier to say. But GSM is the changes in the tissue of the vagina that you get with loss of estrogen and testosterone too, but primarily with estrogen. And when you get those changes, the tissue shrinks, it becomes less stretchy, it becomes more thin and can tear. I have patients who come in and say that it is like having sex with broken glass in their vagina.
And so obviously the symptom is it becomes very painful to have sex.
Yes, but not only that, leaking urine, urinary urgency. Even if you are not having partnered sex with penetration, the changes to the urethra and the bladder that you get will eventually lead to recurrent UTIs. And I don't know if you've ever had close relationships with any older women, but when they get UTIs, they get mental dementia changes. Oh, where that puts them in the hospital. And urosepsis is when you get these older women get bladder infections that can kill them. They 20% of admissions to women in their 60s were to the hospital were for urinary tract related illness.
Wow. Okay, so how are you getting this medicine? Is this a shot? Is it a pill?
It's so easy. There's multiple different forms of vaginal estrogen that you can do. You can do a vaginal estrogen cream just twice a week. Swab around the entrance of the vagina. There's a vaginal estrogen tablet called Vagifem that if you don't like creams and things, you can put that tablet in there and it dissolves these are things you just do twice a week. And it protects you from recurrent UTIs, from painful sex, with recurrent problems with leaking urine, urinary urgency, all these things that are so preventable. And
do you have to go to the doctor for this, or this is like at any CVS?
You do have to get. They are prescriptions, but they don't have to be. They should be available from any primary care doctor, you just say, hey, I need vaginal estrogen. And the thing that is most surprising to most people is there is almost no contraindication. People with breast cancer can take vaginal estrogen. Mm. People with former strokes can take vaginal estrogen. The amount of estrogen that is in a year's worth of vaginal estrogen is the same that's in two estrogen tablets
You have taken
for a whole year. And that protects the vagina.
Okay. Another misconception that people brought up to me is that people think that only your physical health matters. The impact on mental health and well-being really does require attention and care. People do get very depressed. Yeah. Is that what you found?
Oh, and not just me. The studies show it, bear it out. 35 to 40% increase in anxiety and depression in perimenopause. And and when we see that, very similar when we were talking about the PMDD, mm-hmm. when you have those estrogen levels drop, the serotonin levels in your brain are affected. Mm-hmm. Serotonin and norepinephrine. And you can combat some of that with SSRIs and or SNRIs, which things like Zoloft and Lexpro and Effexor. And that's what we did a lot of the time is we're like, oh, just put her on an SSRI. But we're neglecting all the changes in her brain that are happening, that we could prevent dementia. We could prevent the changes in the lungs, the inflammatory disease, all the problems in the joints, in the bones, all these things. Instead of ignoring what's going on in her brain and trying to just medicate that, we can try to balance that out and help some of that anxiety, help some of that depression.
Right. I think a lot of people also, the part of the depression comes from the fact that they think that menopause means loss of femininity, or it's like the end of an era.
Yeah.
You know, what else can people do to realize that is not what that means?
I think that the things that we're seeing here, that we see here with the change in Gen Xers mm-hmm. and millennials, it's a whole new ballgame, right? Yeah. I mean, it is a change, but it doesn't have to be painful. It doesn't have to be that dramatic change, the dramatic loss of function, because mm-hmm. that's what we used to think this is meant decrepitude.
Right.
You became weak and frail. And that with now what we know about resistance exercise, getting a bone density early. Don't wait till you're 60. You know what? Medicare wants you to wait till you're 65 to get a bone density. That horse has left the barn at that point. Right. I mean, there's nothing, there's no turning back. Go in and tell your doctor that, you know, I am 50 and I want a bone density now. And they can, if you can say, hey, I had a family history of osteoporosis, they should be able to get it approved. But even if they don't, get a bone density, spend the $250 and find out where you are and combat those problems now. And this is what we are looking at and what we thought of as of menopause is the lack of attention or care to maintaining our health.
Right.
It was allowing that decline to happen.
So, all right. So just to recap, I think it's important for people to really understand that this is not something that they need to fear. I mean, I think a lot of it is that so many people don't want to talk about it. And then when you hear about it, when they do talk about it, there's so much negativity around it because everyone says, oh my God, it's been so painful. It's been so miserable. Right. It's affected my mental health. It's affected my marriage. It's affected the way I Absolutely. Feel about my body. I wasn't able to fix the symptoms and it affected my lifestyle and all these things. And what you're saying is there are ways to remedy it. And there are ways mm-hmm. to, especially if you educate yourself on all the different things. But the first thing is to make sure that we know that you're in a stage of premenopause, perimenopause, so that you are, you know, not overlooking some other disease, because a lot of right. these symptoms are things that could be multitude of other things.
Yes. Yes. And don't let yourself, the people gaslight you into thinking, oh, this is normal. Oh, this is nothing. This is something you should ignore. And I think that is the biggest thing. And if you can't find a doctor, if your doctor is not listening to you, then you need to move on. And there are a lot of good telehealth doctors that that are available to anyone in any state. If you can't find someone, but hopefully you can find someone close by to work with, because right. that is such an important relationship.
So meaning that it is an important thing and it is a big deal that we're going to go through something like this, or we are going through something. So you should work with a doctor who sees the changes in you and is able to help you get through that and not diminish your feelings. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Okay. Or ignore them altogether, or send you to 8 different specialists that are not really finding the real problem.
Right. All right. Where can people find you, get a hold of you, or, you know, if they want more information on menopause and what they're going through, where can they look that up?
So I am on Instagram, but I'm also at Dr. Kate White, OBGYN. But I will say, there are 3 books that I recommend to my patients, and I send them links, and mostly Audible links, because it's a lot to get through. But so when you're driving somewhere, and those 3 books are The New Menopause by Dr. Mary Claire Haber. Amazing. And gives you so much information on so many points, and nutrition and hormone therapy and all kinds of things that about the, what they experience and what you are experiencing. And is this normal or not? Then the other one is Estrogen Matters, which Estrogen Matters is a book by Dr. Avram Blooming, who's a oncologist, and really was one of the first books that went through why do we feel this way? What are the studies show that makes us feel about? What are the good things about hormone therapy? What are the bad things? Mm-hmm. So Estrogen Matters. And then the third one is The Menopause Brain by Dr. Lisa Moscone, which is one of the most fascinating books about how hormones change and how it affects your brain and what you can do lifestyle wise, diet wise, all those things to help preserve your brain beyond hormone therapy.
And you had mentioned before we were on air, but something about how you might be doing some in-person talk.
Yes,
can you talk a little bit about that really quick?
Yeah. So I'll be doing, and again, these are all in the works with some really amazing women that I are also in areas of diet, exercise, nutrition, breast cancer survivorship, sexual medicine. So we'll be doing some retreats coming up, but they'll be posted hopefully within the next 6 to 9 months. And bringing over one of Dr. Maggie Evans and meeting up hopefully somewhat with one of the people I love. We talked about Kara Metz, who does a menopause women's health exercise program. But lots of things out there to try to just spread as much information as we can and try to get things online, but really to try to get things in person if we can, because there's nothing like being able to discuss your menopause story with someone who can really help you through it.
Right. And to really connect with somebody so you don't feel so in the dark about all that stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today. I think that was really helpful. I think people should definitely feel free to reach out to you and look at all your stuff if they have more questions. Dr. White, I really appreciate your time.
Oh, this has been such a pleasure. And I'm so glad that you're helping to spread the word.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Misunderstood.